Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United States Institute of Peace for this very welcome and important gathering. It is indeed an honor to have Vice President Ibarreche with us this morning. My main substantive contribution at the outset will be to urge you all, please, to turn off your cell phones or put them on silent mode, which we all are guilty of at one time or another, I think. But I would want to turn for the actual introduction of the President to our Chairman of the Board of the United States Institute of Peace, Robin West, who was appointed by our President, Bush, and in his day job is founder and president of PFC Energy, which is a prominent energy, international energy firm, oil and beyond, I guess one could put it thus. And Mr. West has also held positions, senior positions, in the U.S. government, in the administrations of President Reagan and President Ford. So without further ado, Robin, if I can invite you to the podium. Thank you.
My honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. I'd like to extend a special welcome to the Bass President, Juan José Ibarreche. President Ibarreche, indeed, comes at a special time. The prospects for sustained peace in the Basque region look brighter than ever. With the Basque separatist group at his recent declaration of a permanent ceasefire, the Basque conflict has moved from a destructive cycle of violence to constructive political dialogue and highly promising initiatives for peace. Talks between the Spanish and Basque administrations are currently taking place to manage the dialogue with ETA, as well as to develop creative approaches to the issue of sovereignty. We are thus delighted that the President could visit the Institute at such a propitious moment. The Institute, as many of you know, has been involved in conflicts and peace processes around the world, from conflicts making daily news headlines like Iraq and Afghanistan, to peace processes presently receiving less media attention, such as Northern Ireland and the Basque Country. The Institute has learned that there is great value in assembling expertise on conflicts all across the globe in the effort to devise more effective strategies for the promotion of peace. Our experience has delivered many lessons in peacemaking, some of which I hope can be of help to the President and to others involved, given the wide open window of opportunity before us now. Yet, in drawing from these lessons, we might keep in mind the unique aspects of Europe's Basque region. One, it holds the highest degree of self-governance of any subnational entity in Europe. Secondly, this is important, it is a rich area with incomes above the Spanish average. Perhaps then it would seem surprising that the Basque area has experienced violence. Since its inception, ETA has caused more than 800 deaths, left hundreds wounded, and has made innumerable attacks and threats on various sectors of the population. I visit Madrid frequently and have been through some of this. Thus, even wealthy areas with a degree of self-governance like the Basque Country are not immune. To better understand ETA's recent announcement of a ceasefire, the Institute has benefited immensely from hosting senior fellow Gorka, I don't want to mispronounce this, Espel. Our Institute recently published his analysis of the factors leading up to the ceasefire and options for the future in a special report available in the table outside. Now let me turn the floor over to the President for his insights on recent developments and on the challenges that lie ahead. After the President speaks, he has graciously agreed to take some questions from the floor. Mr. President, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, Egunon is the word that the Basque people use in our ancient language, Euskera, the most ancient in Europe, to say good morning. And first of all, I would like to thank the United States Institute of Peace for inviting me to speak to you about the Basque conflict. And the first idea that I want to convey to you is that following the culmination of the peace process in Ireland, we have a real historic opportunity to resolve the last political conflict of this nature in the heart of Europe. So we have come to share a moment of hope with you. Last March 22nd, the Basque, Spanish, European, and international media reported one of the most hoped for and desired pieces of news by Basque society. ETA formally declared a permanent ceasefire of its armed actions. Before going into greater detail on the conflict, please allow me to explain who the Basque people are and why it is important for us to come to Washington to share this moment of hope for peace with you. The Basque people have been part of Europe since its origins. Anthropologists and historians state that the Basques settled at the western end of the Pyrenees since prehistoric times. We are therefore considered one of the most ancient people of Europe. Euskera, the native language of the Basques, the most ancient language in Europe, is a language of pre-Indo-European origin whose roots are lost in prehistory. In the Basque territories of the Spanish state, Euskera is an official language, as is Spanish. However, in the Basque territories of the French state, Euskera is spoken but not officially recognized. The Basque people, as reflected in the Encyclopedia Britannica, are located in seven territories that are pleasantly articulated in three different political and administrative realities, divided between the French and the Spanish state by the border along the Pyrenean mountain range. On the French side, there are three Basque territories without a regime of autonomous government. On the Spanish side, the other four Basque territories are grouped into two autonomous regions, the Community of Navarra and the Basque Autonomous Community. Throughout history, the Basque people have had to emigrate for political, economic, and social reasons. Today, it is estimated that there are at least 6 million people of Basque descent in a number of countries around the world. Universal figures of Basque origin, such as Juan Sebastián Elcano, the first man to navigate around the globe, Saint Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, René Cassin, father of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and Nobel Peace Prize winner, Francisco de Vitoria, the father of international law, Simon Bolivar, the liberator of South America, and so many others, more recent figures such as Valenciaga, Unamuno, Pío Baroja, Chillida, and Oteiza, had been the best ambassadors of a peace-loving people with an enduring entrepreneurial spirit. The Basque people have not shut themselves away from the course of events in Europe. We are a people in the vanguard of Europe. The Basque Autonomous Community stands high in European rankings of welfare, life expectancy, and levels of education above countries such as Germany, France, Great Britain, and Spain. Our per capita income stands at €30,000, more or less $36,000, 25% above the European average. Applying the methodology of the Human Development Report prepared by the United Nations, the Basque country would be among the top 10 countries in the world ranking for human development. The Basques have also played an active role in the history of the United States for over 100 years. At the end of the 19th century, there was already evidence of Basque settlements in the colonization of the Western states. Miguel Leonis, known as El Vasco, was one of the legendary founders of California. In 1885, the first publication in the Basque language appeared in the area of San Francisco and Los Angeles. At present, there are around 60,000 Basque Americans across all the states of the Union, but particularly in California, Idaho, Nevada, Washington, and Oregon. Basque Americans have almost 40 centers, and Basque Americans have almost 40 centers and official associations under the umbrella of the North American Basque Organization. As an anecdote, I can tell you that a Basque American, Fran de Carranza, used the Basque language to trick Japanese a counter-espionage during the Second World War. And it was a Basque phrase which helped to give the order in code for the landings at Guadalcanal. Perhaps one of the greatest admirers of the Basques and their system of government was none other than John Adams, the second president of the United States. He quoted the Basques as an example of democracy in his speech defending the Constitution of the United States. He thus described the Basque in 1786. These extraordinary people have preserved their ancient language, genius, laws, government, and manners without innovation longer than any other nation of Europe. There are strong and long-standing links of friendship between the Basque and American people. So we certainly couldn't turn down the kind invitation by the United States Institute of Peace to share this moment of hope. Why has ETA declared a permanent ceasefire? Since 1968, the year in which ETA committed its first attack with loss of life, until March 22nd this year, almost 40 years of violence have gone by. During this time, ETA's terrorist attacks have led to the loss of 859 lives, with thousands of other people injured, threatened, and subject to extortion. Furthermore, the violence has caused almost 1,000 people to be arrested. Selective killings of ETA militants by paramilitary anti-terrorist groups, the closure of certain media, the banning of Basque political parties that have not expressly condemned ETA, as well as the denunciation of acts of torture by international organizations such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. In the past, a number of attempts at negotiation have been made between the Spanish state and ETA to put an end to the problem of violence. The two most recent took place in 1989 in Algeria, when the socialist Felipe González was president of Spain, and in 1998 in Switzerland, when José María Aznar was president. Both attempts failed, among other reasons, because two different problems were confused: the problem of the violence of ETA and the solution of the Basque political conflict. What reasons have led ETA to declare a permanent ceasefire now? First, pressure from Basque society demanding peace from ETA. Second, the new international scenario after the terrible attacks against the World Trade Center in New York on September 11, 2001. Third, the new scenario in the Spanish state following the Islamic terrorist attack in Madrid on March 11, 2004. Following this tragedy, ETA made the decision not to commit attacks on people and began a period of discreet conversation authorized by the new president of the Spanish government, Rodríguez Zapatero, who was shown a greater disposition towards dialogue than his predecessor, Aznar. And fourth, the new political scenario that has opened up in the Basque country following the approval of the proposal for a new statute of free association with Spain by an absolute majority of the Basque parliament in December 2004. The proposal was rejected by the Spanish parliament, but it has laid the groundwork for the solution to the Basque conflict. The second idea is that the Basque conflict is a historic problem of a political nature that has existed for 170 years. The configuration of the Kingdom of Spain in the Middle Ages was achieved through the conquest of other neighboring kingdoms. The Basque territories maintained a peaceful political coexistence, first with the Kingdom of Castile, and later with the different kingdoms of Spain, based on respect for the Basque fueros, charters, that is, the laws and customs that allowed the Basques to maintain their identity and their own model of self-government. This relationship, based on mutual respect, came to an abrupt end after two civil wars, the Carlist Wars of 1836 and 1839. From then on, the Spanish state imposed the constitutional unity of the monarchy on the Basques and proceeded to abolish their charters and system of self-government by force. The political problem is born. Basque nationalism emerged 111 years ago in 1895 as a democratic political movement to demand freedom for the Basque people, to defend their identity and to recover their force, the right to govern themselves according to their own laws. The Basque people only recovered part of their political autonomy in 1936 during the Spanish Civil War caused by the fascist uprising led by General Franco. Franco's eventual dictatorship brought with it the complete abolition of Basque autonomy, the persecution of the Basque language, prison, exile, and the repression of many thousands of Basques. In this atmosphere of repression, ETA emerged as a violent response to the dictatorship, similar to other movements of national liberation at the time. The problem of the violence is born. During the Franco dictatorship, the first Basque government remained in exile. Its president, José Antonio Aguirre, was received by the American people in 1941. The headquarters of the Basque government, was set up in New York, where President Aguirre was professor at the University of Columbia until 1946. That same year, on May 21st, 1946, President Aguirre denounced the repression exercised by the Franco dictatorship on the Basque country to the first Secretary General of the United Nations, and formally submit the memorandum from the autonomous Basque government to the subcommittee of the Security Council. The end of the dictatorship and the recovery of democracy in Spain led to the approval of a new constitution, in 1978, which only received support from 30.8% of the population of the Basque country. Later, the approval in 1979 of a second statute of autonomy for the Basque country led to the creation of the Basque government and its own parliament. The statute of autonomy has served to administer a number of powers and competences that have led to higher welfare for the Basques. But after 27 years, the immense majority of the Basque society demand the negotiation of a new framework of relations with the Spanish state. Recently, on December 21, 2004, the Basque Parliament approved a proposal by an absolute majority for a new framework of relations with the Spanish state based on free association and mutual respect. The proposal was rejected by the Spanish Parliament, but is still on the table as an instrument that contains the basis for resolving the Basque conflict using an exclusively political and democratic approach. Third, the Basque conflict. two distinct problems, two different processes of solution. Understanding the Basque conflict means recognizing the existence of two distinct problems that require different interlocutors and different processes of solution. They have elements that link them, but they must not be confused. On one hand, there is the problem of the violence of ETA, and on the other hand, there is the existence of a political problem that requires its own process of solution. Fourth, the solution to the problem of violence. The peace process, interlocutors, faces difficulties. As a starting point, the peace process requires that institutions and society itself accompany and support all the victims of terrorism. The main protagonists in the solution to the problem of violence are ETA and the Spanish government. However, the Basque government and the Basque political parties are necessary agents to drive and facilitate progress in the process. The phases of the process can be structured in three stages. Verification of the permanent ceasefire, as the Spanish government has announced, this stage will be considered completed this June, 3 months after the declaration by ETA. The beginning of formal dialogue between interlocutors of ETA and Spanish government following the verification of the permanent ceasefire, and a process of one-off agreements and the gradual solution of the problems of the prisoners and technical aspects of decommissioning weapons. The main difficulties of this peace process in the light of negative experiences in the past are of two kinds: the lack of flexibility in the application of prison policy and possible violent acts by uncontrolled groups who are unhappy with the process. The fifth point is the solution of the political conflict. The process of normalization, interlocutors faces difficulties. Obviously, to be able to solve the political problem, it is first necessary to recognize its existence. The political problem is defined by the existence of a large majority of Basque citizens, 8 out of 10, according to all the sociological studies, who demand the right to decide their own future freely and democratically. In other words, to recognize the existence of the Basque people and their right to decide. The main protagonist in the solution of the historic political problem that exists with the Spanish state are the Basque political parties as the legitimate representative of the will of the people and, in the final analysis, Basque society. The political problem must be solved if we want to achieve a model of peaceful coexistence between Basque country and Spain for the 21st century based on free adhesion and not imposition. The process for resolving the political conflict has, I understand it, four phases. Firstly, multi-party dialogue, multi-party talks that include all political and territorial sensibilities without exclusions. Prior to the configuration of the multi-party talks, it will be necessary for all the parties to agree on the methodology, the content, the interlocutors, the decision-making process, and the schedule. Without this guarantee, these multi-party talks could fail. Secondly, an integrating agreement. An agreement for political normalization that envisages the right to decide of the Basque people requires a broad majority as a basis for peaceful coexistence in the future. The objective of maximum possible consensus should be pursued, but nobody's veto can be accepted. Thirdly, democratic verification. The agreement reached in the multi-party talks must be validated by the Basque society. Basque society has the right to be consulted and democratically express its opinion on the results achieved in these talks. And finally, negotiation and agreement. After the agreement and its democratic ratification, the process of negotiation and agreement with the Spanish state should be initiated to incorporate the democratic will of Basque society into the legal system, making use of the clauses within the Spanish Constitution that recognize the historic rights of the Basque people and also the international agreements ratified by the Kingdom of Spain. What are the difficulties involved in solving the Basque political problem? In my opinion, there are five types of difficulties. The first is that the Spanish government might not recognize that all political projects can be defended and developed in a peaceful manner. The second is that there could be parties that are not willing to take part in the multi-party talks. The third is that there may be parties that do not acknowledge the existence of a political problem that needs to be resolved. The fourth is that Basque society could be prevented from democratically verifying the agreements reached. And the fifth is that a narrow and inflexible interpretation of the Spanish Constitution may prevail that would make it impossible to incorporate the will of Basque society into the legal system. My sixth idea is the right to decide, the key to the solution. The Basque people have the right to self-determination. This is Article 1 of the declaration approved by an absolute majority of the Basque Parliament on February 15, 1990. The recognition of the right of the Basque people to decide their own future and the commitment to exercise this right through pacts and negotiation is the key to the solution. This has also been understood by the state of Idaho, which on March 11, 2002, formally approved Senate Joint Memorial number 114 in support of the right of the Basques to self-determination. The right of peoples to decide, that is the right to self-determination recognized in international agreements on human rights, is not just a right applicable to ex-colonies. It is a right that is inherent to all the peoples of the earth. It has been invoked by UNESCO as a fundamental instrument for the prevention of violent conflict and was put forward for the first time by President Wilson after the First World War as one of the basic points in order to avoid further violent conflicts between the nations of the world. The right to self-determination has also been the basis for the configuration of Europe as we know it today. The process of national emancipation of many peoples in Eastern Europe after the fall of the Berlin Wall and their later adhesion to the new Europe freely and voluntarily would not be understood without the right to self-determination. Indeed, just 3 weeks ago, on May 21st, the people of Montenegro exercised in a peaceful and democratic manner the right to self-determination to solve a historic problem of political nature in the very heart of Europe. The right to decide and the obligation to reach agreement has been clearly recognized as the key to resolve other conflicts of identity and belonging in modern and advanced societies, as in the case of Quebec and Canada. This is the best reference example that can be applied to resolve the Basque conflict. And the final idea of my speech is the role of the international community, a fundamental contribution to the resolution of the Basque conflict. The main protagonist in finding a political and democratic resolution to the Basque conflict is Basque society itself. Nevertheless, the experience of other similar conflicts in Europe and the world have shown us that the support, collaboration, and thrust of international organizations and civil movements is a basic element in the resolution of political conflicts. In this sense, we appreciate the declarations of support for the peace process in the Basque Country made by both the European Union and the Pope Benedict XVI. In my opinion, it could be an important boost if the United Nations expressly declared itself in favor of a resolution to the Basque conflict. Finally, the active involvement of experts and institutions operating on an international scale would be a fundamental contribution to the resolution of the conflict in the Basque Country by endorsing the peace process and political normalization. In closing, we have come to share a moment of hope with you. While international support will complement the critical work that lies ahead, we are very conscious that the work is ours to do and the future ours to decide. Rest assured that we are prepared to make the most of this historic opportunity. Thank you.
So, thank you very much, Mr. President. We will now move to your questions. We have a good turnout. So I would please ask, as you come up to the microphone, please kindly give your name and your affiliation. Be relatively brief in your questions, and we can cover as many as possible throughout the course of the event. Thank you.
President Ibaretske, Diana Negroponte of the U.S. Institute of Peace. In your invitation to the international community to become directly involved in the resolution of these disputes, would you be willing to consider a third-party mediator in the form of either the European Parliament, the Court, or the European Commission? And would you be able to speculate what would be the response to this question from the government of Spain? Thank you.
Well, I answer in Spanish, perhaps more accurately. Yo personalmente estoy convencido de que el trabajo fundamental corresponde a las fuerzas políticas vascas y a la sociedad vasca. A partir de ahí, el apoyo internacional será eso, apoyo internacional, pero no revelará en ningún caso o no relevará en ningún caso del trabajo a los agentes políticos vascos, que somos la clave para avanzar en la resolución del conflicto.
President Baracci, in your speech you spoke very much to two types of problems in the Basque problem, that there's a problem of violence and the political problem. Speaking specifically on the problem of violence, clearly the history of violence that has occurred between ETA and the counterterrorism responses on the part of the Spanish state have created very specific kind of political constituencies that see themselves as victims. Do you think that there's a constructive role in the peace process for victims? And if so, what would that look like?
Lo he trasladado en mi propia conferencia. Creo que el punto de partido de cualquier conflicto es que no se puede construir un proceso de paz sobre la base del olvido de las víctimas. Por lo tanto, el reconocimiento moral, material del daño causado a las víctimas son un punto de partido fundamental para poder abordar un proceso de paz que, repito, no podrá ser nunca abordada desde el olvido, sino desde la recuperación de la dignidad de todas las personas, muy especialmente de aquellas que han sido víctimas de un proceso de esta naturaleza.
What's working?
Can you confirm what
it is? The translation, how?
Yeah, well. Many people don't have them.
Aaron, do you know if the interpreting is working, the translation?
Yes.
What channel?
Six.
The channel?
Six.
Six for
six.
English.
Okay.
Six for English?
Channel six for English?
Try that. David, you had a...
Mr. President, I want to, first of all, thank you for such a illuminating and comprehensive statement of both the current situation, the history, and the steps toward the future, moving from negotiations between the government and ETA about certain issues that are solely of concern to ETA, and then the all-party conference, and then the negotiations with the Spanish government. You have made a strong point of the international acceptance of self-determination as the universal principle and its application to the Basque situation. Self-determination can mean different things in different places and different moments in history. And I just wonder whether you didn't make explicit reference to what self-determination means in the Basque context. Is independence a part of that determination, or is it a more extreme form of autonomy than currently exists, or what are the parameters of self-determination in the Basque context in the current moment in history?
La autodeterminación es un concepto que lo que incorpora es capacidad de decidir tu propio futuro. Nosotros admitimos que el derecho internacional ha novado el derecho de autodeterminación, que durante el siglo XIX y el siglo XX ha tenido una determinada dimensión, y por lo tanto aquí mismo al lado tenemos una interpretación moderna del derecho de autodeterminación, del derecho de decisión, en el caso de Kennedy, de Canadá y Quebec, que ha interpretado desde un punto de vista jurídico el Tribunal Superior de Canadá, haciendo una reflexión en torno a la necesidad que existe de negociar con un pueblo que toma una determinada decisión para incorporar sus decisiones en el ordenamiento jurídico. Este es el planteamiento que nosotros tenemos del derecho a decidir, por lo tanto, un planteamiento moderno que está acompañado también de interpretaciones modernas del derecho internacional y en concreto de la sentencia del Tribunal Superior de Canadá. A partir de ahí, ustedes saben, yo represento a un pueblo en el que hay ciudadanos que legítimamente entienden que su patria y su nación es España, y hay ciudadanos que entienden también legítimamente que su patria y su nación es Euskadi. Y desde ese punto de vista, lo que creo que como lehendakari yo tengo que ofrecer a la sociedad vasca es la capacidad de opción de los propios ciudadanos en torno a los diferentes modelos. Yo he hablado de una propuesta aprobada por el Parlamento Vasco. El Parlamento Vasco aprobó una propuesta de nuevo estatuto político para establecer una relación política para el siglo XXI, una relación amable desde un punto de vista político con España para el siglo XXI, entre Euskadi y España, y lo que en ese texto en concreto yo formalicé ante el gobierno vasco y el gobierno vasco ante el Parlamento, que fue quien definitivamente lo aprobó, fue esencialmente un texto político jurídico en el que se recoge la capacidad de decidir del pueblo vasco y el desarrollo pactado de esta capacidad de decisión, en concreto en un proyecto en el que no se planteaba la ruptura con el Estado español.
Okay.
Thank you. Welcome to Mr. President. My name is Stephen Farry, a senior fellow at USIP, and I'm the General Secretary of the Alliance Party of Northern Ireland. And there are many parallels between the Northern Ireland peace process and the situation in the Basque region. I think even today, Gerry Adams, the president of Sinn Féin, is in Bilbao talking to ETA, I understand, or sorry, Batasuna. oops. Easy mistake to make. First of all, an observation and then two questions. First of all, the major advantage that I think you now have is the use of the word permanent in ETA's ceasefire, which is something we spent 10 years in Northern Ireland trying to get the IRA to say that their ceasefire is permanent. How significant do you see that? Also, do you see a role for independent verification of ETA's permanent ceasefire in terms of providing transparency and ensuring that there's no, shall we say, political spin being put on what is or is not happening from either side? Also, in relation to the final discussions regarding the status of the Basque region, do you see problems in how far the Spanish government can go in trying to accommodate to local demands without creating other tensions with respect to other regions within Spain?
Bueno, en primer lugar, para felicitar a Irlanda, porque en definitiva ustedes han sabido construir un proceso de paz y de negociación política que, siendo diferente, obviamente, al nuestro, sin embargo, hay elementos en los que necesariamente se asemejan, sobre todo en la necesidad de emplear el diálogo como único instrumento para la solución de los conflictos. En segundo lugar, la pregunta en relación con el alto el fuego. Permanente, ¿qué concepto es el de, técnicamente, el de permanente? Yo no entiendo de conceptos militares, pero no tengo ninguna duda de que estamos ante un proceso que debemos procurar que no tenga vuelta atrás. Y por lo tanto, si a mí como Lehendakari se me pidiera que hiciera una interpretación del alto el fuego permanente, ¿qué significa? Para mí, desde el punto de vista de la superación de la violencia, significa una oportunidad que no podemos perder bajo ningún concepto para conseguir definitivamente la paz y, por lo tanto, hacer absolutamente irreversible la declaración del alto el fuego. En segundo lugar, la verificación se está produciendo. Esa verificación, saben ustedes, lo he comentado en mi intervención, que el presidente Zapatero trasladó que en los próximos días va a poner en marcha a lo largo del mes de junio la negociación con ETA, y esa negociación se realizará una vez verificado el alto el fuego permanente. Por tanto, hay puesta ya una fecha, que la será en las próximas semanas, para iniciar los procesos de negociación formales una vez observado y verificado el alto el fuego. Y la pregunta en relación con las discusiones, yo no tengo ningún temor acerca del debate político. Lo que realmente me parece terrible, terrible, es la existencia de la violencia. Pero el que exista una posibilidad de resolver, en términos de convivencia pacífica y amable, un problema que dura tantos años, yo he hablado de 170 años entre Euskadi y España, me parece que es una gran oportunidad. Y estoy absolutamente convencido que, tan interesado como estamos el gobierno, como está la sociedad vasca, en buscar un modelo de relación amable con España, está también España y el gobierno español de encontrar un modelo de relación política y de convivencia amable también con el pueblo vasco. Yo soy optimista. Estoy absolutamente convencido de que si trabajamos por el acuerdo, conseguiremos el acuerdo.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, welcome. My name is Mandy Laso. I'm Gorka's research assistant, and he's been writing a lot about the peace movement in the Basque Country and social movements, and I'm wondering if you could comment on what effect this social movement will have with the dialogue process and the negotiations in the upcoming months and years ahead.
Sí, yo creo que la sociedad organizada a través de las universidades, a través de la iglesia, iglesias, a través de las trade unions, de los sindicatos, de las asociaciones de paz, tiene un trabajo muy importante que realizar. Tengan en cuenta ustedes una cosa: una situación de ausencia de violencia por parte de ETA y por lo tanto una situación de avanzar en el proceso de paz no permitirá aún que tengamos una sociedad normalizada políticamente. Harán falta acuerdos políticos y harán falta que esos acuerdos políticos sean ratificados por parte de la sociedad vasca. Pero incluso, permítanme otro paso más, una sociedad en ausencia de violencia que tenga un proceso de normalización política lanzado con acuerdos e incluso ratificaciones democráticas por parte de la sociedad vasca no será aún una sociedad que tenga un modelo de convivencia plena y que inicie un camino de reconciliación. Y por lo tanto, en ese espacio que va a durar un tiempo, que no va a ser un tiempo cercano, es donde yo personalmente creo que encajan perfectamente no solamente los esfuerzos que son insustituibles de las fuerzas políticas vascas, sino también el esfuerzo de una sociedad vasca organizada que ha tenido capacidad, a pesar de los problemas, de presentar estos datos desde un punto de vista económico, desde un punto de vista social, y que ahora se plantea un nuevo reto. Y ese nuevo reto es conseguir en los próximos años un proyecto de sociedad reconciliada. En ese camino es donde creo que fundamentalmente tienen capacidad de actuación y de desarrollar sus iniciativas las instituciones públicas y privadas que están destinadas a trabajar en favor de un modelo de convivencia.
We have questions. Sorry.
I'm prepared to ask a question. Mr. President, I'm Mike Lexon, also from the U.S. Institute of Peace, and let me join my colleagues in thanking you for this extremely interesting intervention. If I could go back to a point you made at the beginning, you talked about the Basque people effectively being governed in three different regimes. There is the Basque regional government, which you preside. There is Navarra, and then there are the three provinces on the French side of the Pyrenees. The question is really in two parts. Am I correct in thinking that whatever dialogue you would have with Madrid would still likely leave open issues related to Navarra and to the French provinces, and thereby mean that the Basque conflict or the Basque problem as such would continue with respect to those areas? And at the same time, am I correct in thinking that even if that were the case, you would not anticipate that violence would be associated with that continuing political problem?
No. La violencia se tiene que acabar de una vez y para siempre. Y en segundo lugar, mire, los vascos en el mundo viven juntos. Aquí en Estados Unidos, antes estábamos hablando, antes de comenzar esta conferencia, cómo los vascos de Álava, de Vizcaya, de Guipúzcoa, de Navarra, de Iparralde, viven juntos, desarrollan juntos sus propias actividades. Aquí en los Estados Unidos. Pero es cierto que hay que asumir con un principio de realidad que las realidades políticas y jurídicas en las que hoy vivimos son en las que hoy vivimos. Y por tanto hay que aceptar esa realidad. Hay que aceptar que somos un pueblo que tiene tres ámbitos de decisión. El ámbito de decisión de Álava, Vizcaya y Guipúzcoa, el ámbito de decisión de Navarra y el ámbito de decisión de Iparralde. ¿Puede ser esto un problema para el futuro? Si aplicamos el concepto de la democracia, no. Esto es, Navarra, el futuro de Navarra, las relaciones que Navarra quiera tener con otros territorios vascos hermanos, las definirán y las decidirán los navarros y navarras. Y igual pasará con los vascos y vascas del país vasco-francés. Y por lo tanto, si aplicamos el principio democrático, que parte de la existencia de un pueblo, pero también de que vivimos en tres ámbitos jurídico-políticos diferentes, la comunidad autónoma vasca y Navarra en el Estado español, y Iparralde, que no tiene hoy una organización, el país vasco-francés, que no tiene una organización política o administrativa en el Estado francés, si aplicamos el principio democrático de que las relaciones tendrán que ser decididas por los propios hombres y mujeres que viven en esos territorios, yo creo que estamos ante una solución democrática enormemente sencilla. No estamos ante un problema complicado, tampoco en relación con esta cuestión, bajo mi punto de vista.
Thank you, Mr. President. The coming of peace will bring to the surface certain issues relating to justice that need to be resolved. There may be crimes of violence that have not yet been addressed by the courts, and Your Excellency has also spoken about the problem of the prisoners, and the state has got to decide whether to keep them in prison or whether to commute their sentences. What's the opinion of political parties in the Basque region about these issues of justice? What does the Spanish state think about how these issues should be dealt with? Thank you.
Sí, dos partes en su reflexión, enormemente importantes, a lo largo de los procesos que vamos a vivir. El primero, en relación con la superación de las dificultades. Todos estamos diciendo que en un proceso de construcción de paz, de construcción de acuerdos políticos, vamos a tener y vamos a vivir dificultades. También de eso podemos aprender del ejemplo irlandés. Lo realmente importante es que los agentes políticos tomemos conciencia de lo importante que es dar respuesta con capacidad inmediata a las dificultades. Cuando se produzcan hechos violentos, reaccionar inmediatamente, desde el rechazo más absoluto y desde la defensa, que cualquier tipo de intimidación no tiene cabida en un proceso de paz ni en un proceso de discusión de acuerdos políticos. Por lo tanto, yo creo que el empeño debemos ponerlo no en aquello que no podemos evitar, desgraciadamente, sino en lo que podemos realmente evitar, en lo que podemos atajar de manera inmediata. Y por tanto, si se producen dificultades, lo importante es que sepamos acometerlas y solucionarlas inmediatamente. Yo creo que hasta ahora, al menos, las que hemos tenido dificultades, creo que las hemos ido superando por parte y con buena voluntad por parte de todos los agentes políticos. La segunda pregunta, la relacionada a la política penitenciaria, es una pregunta que sería seguramente muy larga de responder y no podría en un minuto resumir todo lo que pensamos al respecto. Pero mire, nosotros siempre hemos reclamado del gobierno español el que se desarrolle una gestión de la política penitenciaria acorde con los derechos humanos. Y por tanto, que los presos cumplan las condenas en las cárceles más próximas a su domicilio es simplemente un derecho fundamental consagrado en la Constitución española y en otras tantas constituciones europeas. Por lo tanto, partimos del principio de que todos y todas las personas tienen derechos fundamentales que son indivisibles y que por lo tanto también afectan a personas que han sido detenidas e incluso a encarceladas después de haber tenido sentencias por haber cometido horribles delitos. A pesar de todo ello, los derechos fundamentales consagrados en los principios constitucionales son para todos igual, y hemos reclamado siempre desde las instituciones vascas, desde el Parlamento Vasco en concreto, el que los derechos humanos deben ser también contemplados en torno a los presos de ETA y los presos en general. Y por lo tanto, el que se deben de producir acercamiento de los presos vascos, de todos los presos vascos, las cárceles vascas, y que se tiene que gestionar la política penitenciaria bajo la idea y el principio constitucional que en Europa impregna la voluntad de todos, y es la inserción de las personas que durante un momento han cometido delitos y han cumplido con las condenas en la sociedad. Por lo tanto, la reinserción y el cumplimiento de las condenas en las cárceles próximas al País Vasco, creo que son los movimientos que todos veremos en el próximo futuro en relación con la política penitenciaria.
Thank you, Mr. President, for a very interesting presentation. I'm Roxanne Myers, Senior Fellow at U.S. Institute of Peace, and from Guyana, South America. I want to commend you for your presentation that has so much focus on the grassroots, on the people in consultation with the people. I'm interested, though, and very curious about how you connect what the desires are of the grassroots into policy and to advance that in the society.
Las políticas públicas
into public policy, and how do you implement that? Because you're saying that what people want, what the Basque people want, will be translated into policy, or what will be part of the political solution. And so I'm asking, how do you translate what the people want, what they say when you get from that consensus on the ground, how do you translate that into policy?
Mm-hmm. Sí. Efectivamente, ese es probablemente el principal o uno de los principales objetivos que debemos de perseguir en el proceso que vamos a abrir, tanto el de el proceso de paz como el proceso de negociación política. Y es la implicación. Yo creo que el gran concepto a desarrollar por parte de los agentes de cualquier conflicto en el mundo es cómo dar participación a la ciudadanía de modo y manera que tomen conciencia de que la solución que vayamos construyendo, tanto en el camino de la paz y la ausencia de violencia, como en el ámbito de la discusión y de los acuerdos políticos, sean iniciativas que se consideren como propias. Si somos capaces de incorporar al debate y a la participación a la sociedad a los dos ámbitos, a los dos problemas que forman parte de la solución del conflicto, sin duda estaremos acercándonos a soluciones más participativas. Mientras que si por contra solo establecemos los debates en términos de cuestiones de los políticos, estaremos alejando probablemente la solución e incrementando la insatisfacción, tanto en el campo de la construcción de la paz en relación con las víctimas, en relación con los colectivos que han sido más castigados por la horrible violencia durante tantos y tantos años, y también en el ámbito de la política, en la medida en que la sociedad vasca tiene conciencia de que ha llegado la hora también para los hombres y mujeres que allí vivimos y trabajamos. Y por tanto, si somos en un momento determinado, si desde la política rompemos esas expectativas, no damos participación, no damos canales de participación y por lo tanto también de participación directa de las personas en las decisiones políticas, me imagino que estaremos equivocando en los objetivos. Por eso hablaba yo de que no solo los partidos políticos, no solo estamos ante una cuestión de políticos, sino estamos ante cuestiones que fundamentalmente deberán de tener su propio debate en la sociedad y que deberán fundamentalmente ser sancionadas y decididos por la propia ciudadanía libremente.
Gracias. Primero quisiera agradecer la presencia de usted aquí y darle la bienvenida aquí al instituto. Soy aquí, trabajo en el instituto. Usted dijo que no se puede construir la paz sobre el olvido. y me gustaría si nos podría adelantar tal vez algunas de las ideas creativas que están contemplando en la sociedad vasca y también entre los partidos políticos sobre cómo hacer eso. Si se está contemplando, por ejemplo, comisiones de verdad o si tienen algunas otras ideas de cómo se podría hacer eso. Gracias.
Sí. Nosotros queremos que el gobierno vasco y que las instituciones nos convirtamos en un agente activo también en el proceso de paz. Y por lo tanto acabamos de aprobar un programa que denominamos Para la Paz y para la Convivencia, con todo un conjunto de medidas, muchísimas medidas, si tienen ustedes interés se lo puedo hacer llegar, en las que fundamentalmente tratamos de la reparación ética, moral, material de las víctimas y las personas que han sufrido la violencia, de los derechos civiles y políticos, y que fundamentalmente cerramos con una reflexión en torno a la educación para la paz y a un conjunto de medidas que tienen que ver fundamentalmente con un proceso de aprendizaje, de enseñanza, que se desarrollará desde la propia escuela. En definitiva, para tratar de lograr hombres y mujeres con capacidad crítica. Hombres y mujeres con capacidad crítica, bien formados y bien cuidados, son los únicos que no permiten desviaciones económicas, desviaciones democráticas, y que garantizan que los países y las instituciones salgan adelante. Por supuesto, y a partir de ahí, el conjunto de medidas que diseñamos en este programa son muy largas de citar, y por lo tanto yo creo que lo que podemos hacer es quedar inmediatamente luego para enviarle el documento a usted y a todos aquellos que quieran saber exactamente cuál es el conjunto de medidas que hemos presentado en un programa integral para la paz y para la convivencia.
I didn't notice before there's a gentleman who's been patiently waiting. We'll take one more question and then...
Thank you. Lehendakari, egunon. El pueblo vasco es un pueblo tradicional, cristiano. ¿Cómo puede tener una violencia anclada en el trasnochado maoísmo? ¿Es un recurso para esta violencia circunstancial, Abertzale, o estamos en una creencia que nos va a llevar después a un neocomunismo en Euskadi?
Es una pregunta en su última parte, Luis, complicada de contestar, pero yo creo que nadie se atreve hoy a presentar ante la sociedad en Europa un proyecto marxista-leninista, porque sabría que inmediatamente cosecharía un resultado no más alto del 1 o el 2%. Y por tanto, me parece que esa es una reflexión de fondo acerca de dónde pueden ir los proyectos políticos que quieran defender determinados planteamientos. Yo estoy absolutamente persuadido de que no ese es el proyecto, con toda seguridad, que vamos a ver por parte de ese mundo. Estoy absolutamente convencido. Y en relación con la primera parte, no te puedo contestar. Nunca he entendido la violencia. Cuando he tratado de, en algún momento, interpretar el porqué de la violencia de ETA y, en general, el porqué de la violencia, me daba cuenta que no es que me colocara con un pie en el abismo, sino que me colocaba yo mismo en el abismo. Y eso es algo a lo que no estoy dispuesto todos los días de mi vida. No lo puedo entender. No puedo entender que nadie pueda utilizar la violencia, y que pueda utilizar la violencia, además, para defender causas que, defendidas a través de la política y la democracia, son absolutamente nobles, como es que existe el pueblo vasco y que tiene derecho a decidir libremente su propio futuro. Yo defendí en el Congreso de los Diputados español, hace un año, poco más de un año, subí al Congreso de los Diputados en Madrid, en las Cortes Generales Españolas, para decir en euskera: Euskal Herriak duela eskubide osoa bere etorkizuna erabakitzeko. El pueblo vasco existe, es uno de los pueblos más antiguos de Europa, y tiene todo el derecho del mundo a decidir su propio futuro. Y no llevé ningún argumento que no fuera el ascendiente y la legitimidad que yo tengo como lehendakari del pueblo vasco. Nada más, lo único que yo allí lleve. Por eso es muy difícil el poder contestar, Luis, de verdad.
Miller Esker, thank you.
Mr. President, thank you very much for,
thank you for your
coming here.
Aquí me aprecio mucho.